Article 2, Section 3 of the United States Constitution has this statement: "The President shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient." That's turned into our big annual State of the Union address. And it seems that if the founding fathers of our country thought it was important that from time to time the president would come forward and explain what condition the United States was in and make suggestions about where the country would go, that the Church of Jesus Christ from time to time would stop and take a look at where it is, because certainly governments rise and fall, but the Church of Jesus Christ will stand. In other words, I guess what I'm suggesting in humility is that what we do is more important than what happens in Washington. And so therefore, we're going to take this Sunday and we're going to spend some time looking at the state of our union, Hill Country Bible Church. Now, we have a clear focus as a church. Hill Country Bible Church is a family of believers committed to reaching people with the life-changing reality of Jesus Christ. And it would be unfortunate if we never stopped to really ask the question, how are we doing in this area? And what I want to suggest to you is that when we look at the current state of Hill Country Bible Church, there is much to be excited about. Let me give you some specific examples. When we look at the current state of Hill Country Bible Church, we see that Hill Country Bible Church is a spiritually enriching family. In fact, just a few months ago, we did a census of you and the congregation and asked you to give us some feedback on things, and you gave us feedback on a number of things, but one of the things that really stood out was that 85% of you feel like your regular experience here at Hill Country Bible Church in worship is very meaningful. 10% more said it was just very good, and then 0.15% didn't vote, and about 0.005% said it was dry. I think that's a significant praise. 85% who come here find the services meet their needs spiritually. Also, I was in a church planning conference this week. I was asked to be one of the speakers, and I went to speak, and it was an interesting conference. They brought in some pretty high-powered guys from around the country to speak, and we were talking to various denominations and denominational leaders. And when they introduced me to speak, the man who put together the conference, who's a guy I respect deeply, who has worked in Austin for a number of years, planted churches here, traveled around the world, and is connected with many networks of people and reads extensively on Christendom, made a very, very positive comment about Hill Country Bible Church. When he was introducing me to come up and speak, he said, "I want you to know," speaking to the audience, he said, "I want you to know that Hill Country Bible Church does a better job of discipling its people than any other large church I've ever known of." That's a huge deal. And I'm a little reluctant to try to pick up and carry that mantle, because that's a huge praise. But we see a lot of people growing in their faith here, and that's a great deal. We've also seen sacrificial stewardship exercised over the years, and none greater than last year here at Hill Country Bible Church. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but you gave over $5 million to support the kingdom and expansion of Jesus Christ's work. That's incredible, $5 million for the kingdom of Jesus Christ. We also witnessed the expansion of the kingdom through a number of things. We saw over 600 people come to faith in Jesus Christ through the ministries of our church last year. We also planted a church, Hill Country Bible Church Pflugerville, which is up and running. We sent about 120 people or so from here over there at the beginning of January of last year. I preached there last Sunday. They had over 400 in attendance already. They collected from their people in giving over $600,000 in their first year of operation. And even greater than that, they saw 60 people come to faith in 1 year in their community. That's an incredible praise. We've seen God using this church to expand His kingdom. Our missions team made some major advances last year. We're putting together a partnership in the country of China right now to have a major ministry emphasis in China, which is a closed country, but God's opening some doors for us to be involved there. We're so excited about what God is doing in missions. And then last night, we had Andre Cole come and speak here. And for those of you who came. I know that you guys are pleased that I didn't lose my head in that whole thing. It was that momentary, you know, kind of sense of numbness that went through my body when the blade came down. I don't know how he got it back on, but it worked. Last night, Andre Cole came, a Christian illusionist, and he presented the gospel to a packed house. 259 people made a commitment to trust Jesus Christ last night. And in addition to the 259 that made a commitment, another 50 requested information as to how they could know more about Jesus Christ. So we are just overwhelmed. We actually prayed that 250 people would come to faith. And 259 came to faith, so I guess we need to expand our faith and pray for a bigger harvest, right? But it was absolutely incredible what we've seen God do this year. And we believe that the state of our union is strong. We believe that God's doing great things, and we're very excited about what He's doing in this church through you as you minister to one another and as we minister to this community. But as the elders began to really pray and evaluate where we go from here, we believe that there is one very clear challenge that we as a church must address and embrace if we're going to take the next step spiritually to become what God has called us to be. I want you to know that we didn't come up with this challenge off the top of our head. About 6 months ago, I took 3 weeks of prayer and planning where I just got away, spent time in prayer, spent time studying the scripture, and spent time just evaluating, God, what is it for us at Hill Country? What's the next step? I came back from that time and I met with the elders and we spent a weekend on retreat just praying and evaluating our purpose statement. Hill Country Bible Church is a family of believers committed to reaching people the life-changing reality of Jesus Christ. Is that true? Is it happening? Are we on target? And where do we go from here? And I want you to know that God led us to address something very specific. In fact, we're only going to present one goal this year for our church. And that one specific issue we believe is critical for each and every person in this room. It's critical for me, and it's critical for you if we're going to take the next step as a church and as individual believers to do what God's calling us to do. And I want to present that to you this morning, but I want to present it from the Bible, because this isn't something creative that we came up with. This is life from the Word. So if you'll turn in your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 4, we're going to spend a few minutes looking at Ephesians chapter 4 this morning, starting in verse 11. Ephesians chapter 4, starting in verse 11. Now, the book of Ephesians is addressing the church, and when we get to Ephesians chapter 4, Paul starts to address the practical how-tos of how do you do church. You know, I think it's interesting that when we think about the state of our union, you know, the nation in which we live, we've kind of come to the conclusion as a country that this is all about we the people. And in doing so, we've created the biggest rift in our nation that we've ever had. When you look at what happened in the last presidential election and how divided our country was, and everything that happened as a result of that, it's pretty clear that when we talk about we the people, there are some people that have diametrically opposed views of what this country is supposed to be like than others. We have a rift that runs right down the middle of the country and kind of divides the two coasts, if you happen to look at how people voted. And people have very different opinions about what this union is supposed to be about. And the reason why we struggle with that is because that we personally believe that the United States is about we the people. The Founding Fathers did not believe that. The Founding Fathers believed that it's about we the people in order to form a more perfect what? Union. And the union is based on what principles? You see, the Founding Fathers did not see the whim of the people or the feelings of the people to be the priority for a nation. They thought that the principles of freedom, the principles of free enterprise, the exercise of people's ability to choose their religious beliefs, people's civility to one another, people keeping the law, that all those ideals and principles embodied in our founding documents, that that's what the United States is about, not the opinions of people. And that when people embrace those ideals and live those ideals, then everybody is satisfied, everybody is happy, and everybody enjoys life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But when we boil it down to what this group wants and what this group wants and what this group feels and what this group thinks, and we the people, then we have a problem. The same thing is true in the church. Most of you think the church is about you. Let's just be honest. You know, it's about my kids' Sunday school. It's about my youth kids' youth program. It's about whether I like the worship style. Do they sing my songs? Is the preaching keeping me awake? Is it in a location near my house? Can I get in and out without getting stuck so that I can actually get to the cafeteria before the Baptist or the Methodist do? You know, is it about my seat or the temperature in the room? Or, you know, it's about me, right? This church is about me. You know what happens when a church becomes about me? We're fragmented, fractured, and anemic in what we're all about. You know what the church is about? The church is about Jesus Christ. And when each and every one of us cling to the ideals and the principles and the truth of Jesus Christ and follow His plan, you know what happens? Every single one of us grow, every single one of us is blessed, and everybody in here enjoys the fruit of a great church. And so when we turn to Ephesians chapter 4, I want you to know who's talking, because it's really coming through the Apostle Paul, but this is a direct message from Jesus Christ. Look at what he says in verse 11. He says concerning the church, it was he. Who is he here? Look at verse 7 if you don't know. It was he. Who is he? It's Jesus Christ, okay? So Jesus Christ is the one who's doing it. In fact, in the Greek here, the he part is thrown forward for emphasis. In other words, Jesus, Jesus alone, Jesus is the one, he's the main guy, okay? It was Jesus, and what did Jesus do? Jesus does something special to make his church move forward, and it's clear in this passage that the principle that we must embrace is that Christ's mission for his church is life change. That's his mission. He wants to see us experience the life-changing reality of Jesus Christ. And he's done everything we need to make it happen. First, he's given us provisions. Notice in verse 11, it was Jesus, he, who gave some to be apostles and some to be prophets and some to be evangelists and some to be pastors and teachers. Jesus gave gifted people to the church. What does the church need? The church needs what Jesus gives it. He gave gifted people to the church. So it's his provision. It's also his priority or his plan. He's given us a plan to be what he's called us to be. And we see that in the next verse. Those people were given to the church to prepare God's people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up. Gifted people, God's Jesus' provision, given to the church to do what? To equip God's people or to prepare God's people. The word prepare there was literally used of what fishermen would do with their nets before they went fishing. They would sit down and they would prepare their nets. They would mend all the holes in their nets. Now, most of us have never really fished with a net. But can you imagine going out to fish with a net if you had a big hole in it? What would happen? I mean, the fish would get away, right? So it was very important to prepare your nets so that they would be effective. He says, Jesus Christ gave gifted people to the church to prepare the people to be effective at doing what? He says it right here in the passage. At works of service. Literally, we could translate this as ministry. I want you to erase forever from your mind that the professional staff are the ministers of Hill Country Bible Church. You know who the ministers are? You are. To prepare God's people, the saints, you, for works of ministry. What are the works of ministry? Serving, giving, teaching, loving, showing mercy, administration, discipleship. That's what he's talking about. So gifted leaders are given to the church to train you, equip you, get you ready to be effective at doing ministry for a clear goal. And Jesus has a goal for his church, and the goal is this, that each person would be like Christ. Each person like Christ. Look what he says. Verse 13, until, everybody's supposed to keep ministering to each other, until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. Now, there's a ton in there, but I just want you to focus on that last little phrase. Okay, this is mind-blowing. Until we all attain to what? Look at it. Unto the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. Part of Christ? No. All of Christ. Measure part of the way up to all of Christ? No. Measure all the way up to the fullness of Christ. Some of us measure up to Christ? No. All of us measure all the way up to the total fullness of Jesus Christ. Now, this is a mind-blowing concept, because you know what that means? That means that the goal of the church is for you personally to take on the characteristics of Jesus Christ. To think like Christ, to act like Christ, and to live like Christ. Is anybody there yet? We're not there, are we? You say, well, you know, I see some people that are closer than others. You know, some people are moving forward, some people are getting further ahead. But, you know, certainly, he can't mean all of us. He absolutely means all of us. You know, most of the time when we measure our spiritual maturity, we measure it like my kids do in school. You know, you ask the kids, and you, those of you who have kids, you probably, you know, how'd you do today? Well, you know, I did pretty good. Well, why do you say you did pretty good? Well, you know, I did pretty good because, you know, you should have seen what Billy was doing. Or, you know, I did pretty good on that test because, you know, I did better than half the class. You know, what's the measurement there? They're measuring their maturity on the basis of their own standards related to their peers. We come into the church and we kind of look around and we see who knows what about the Bible, and we see who's serving in what capacity and who's doing what, and we kind of size ourselves up and we evaluate our maturity based on ourselves and how we measure up to all of our peers. And the only measuring person is Jesus Christ. How do you measure up to Christ? And the goal is that every single person at Hill Country Bible Church, every one of you, and even me, that we would all become like Jesus Christ. You say, that's just a crazy idea. You know, by the power of the Holy Spirit, Paul's just crazy enough to tell us that that's what Jesus wants. Furthermore, he warns us that if we don't do that, if we don't go on to be like Christ, if we don't begin a process that's going to continue to take us in that direction of life change, there is a great danger ahead. In fact, let me give you the principle, and then I'll show it to you in the passage. The principle is this: Christians who don't engage in life change remain immature and place themselves at risk. Christians who don't embrace that goal and who are not moving in that direction, you're going to remain immature and you're going to place yourself at risk. Let me show you that in verse 14. He says, then, when is the then? The then is when we all measure up to Christ. He says, then we will no longer be infants, tossed back and forth by waves and blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of men and their deceitful scheming. What he's saying is it's a dangerous world out there. There are bad ideas and there are bad people. And for those people who aren't becoming like Jesus Christ, who aren't pressing on to maturity in Christ, he gives two pictures here. One is the picture of an infant. Of all of the cute and cuddly things that we think of when we think of an infant, probably the most overriding just kind of thing that grabs you when you look at a baby is how completely and totally vulnerable they are to influences. I mean, they don't have control. They can't move. They can't speak. They're in a situation where they're under the influence of whatever is going on around them or whoever is handling them. And what he's saying is that for people who are not pressing on to become like Jesus Christ, you are vulnerable to false thinking. You are vulnerable to cunning and crafty individuals who can undermine your very life, who can take away your very life. There are people out there that are dangerous. There are ideas out there that are dangerous, and we must understand that. The second picture he gives here is a picture of a boat on the sea. You know, the wind blows, the boat follows the wind. You know, we're not talking about a big inboard, outboard motor here on the back of your big old sea ray cruising across the water. That's not the picture. The picture is a sailboat. And when the wind blows a sailboat or when the waves blow a sailboat, I mean, you're vulnerable to whatever the weather conditions are. And he suggests that if we are not going on to maturity, then we are in jeopardy of being vulnerable to faulty thinking. We are vulnerable to faulty people or people that would cause us harm. What I see in the church today from this analogy are two things that really concern me. The first one is the tendency to drift. Now, I believe that many times you move from the safe harbor of the truth of Jesus Christ. You know, you come to faith in Him and you really want to follow Him and you really want to go on with Him and you're kind of in that warm glow of a relationship with Jesus Christ. But over time, as you set sail on the course of your life, you begin to get busy. And busyness oftentimes leads to confused priorities. And confused priorities oftentimes leads to ethical dilemmas. And ethical dilemmas oftentimes will lead you into immoral decisions. And immoral decisions will frequently lead you into fractured relationships. And all of that happens simply by drifting away in the day-to-day grind of life. You just drift away. Now, that's an incredible danger for the Christian for two reasons. Number one, by drifting away, you get further and further away from that which you are called to be. And someday you'll stand before Christ and you'll give an account for the days and the weeks and the months when you were just drifting away from your purpose in life. And you'll be so sad that you missed out on the opportunities that God had placed before you. For parents, there's even a stronger warning for you. You know, there's a principle about a boat. And wherever the boat is in the water, when it drops its lifeboat, it's going to drop its lifeboat right next to itself. And parents, when you launch your children, you are going to launch your children from where you are. So if you have drifted far from what you believe is right and best and holy and wholesome, and you've drifted and you think to yourself, well, you know, the light's not that far behind me, the truth's not, I'm not that far away. I misplaced priorities, busyness, I got some ethical dilemmas, my relationships are strained, but, you know, by and large, I'm close enough that if I need to get back, I can get back very quickly. You know what you're going to do? You're going to launch your kids from where you are, and they will go out from there. I've had so many parents say, you know, I just don't understand it. I know we didn't do what we should have done. I know our priorities weren't right, but I can't believe our kids are going where they're going. You know what they're doing? They're just following the course away from you out into deeper and darker water. I would challenge you. You take a look at where you are because that's where you're going to launch your kids from. And that's where you're going to move from there. The second danger is not only the danger of drifting, but the danger of capsizing. There are rocks out there, there are storms, there are waves, and there are people that will take you under. And when you're drifting away from the light of truth, you're more at risk to really mess up. You know, every once in a while, somebody will say to me, you know, I saw a Christian brother that's been in the faith for a long time, or a Christian sister, and I can't believe how far off they've gotten, I can't believe what they're doing. And I am more convinced now than ever that this is an incredibly dangerous world, and I believe it's the most dangerous for Christian people who are drifting away from their principles. That's a very dangerous place to be. I sat down the other day with a friend of mine who I hadn't seen in a long time. And this guy had built some significant spiritual principles into my life. He'd ministered to me in some significant ways. And his life has drifted, and he has crashed on the rocks. And things that are going on in his life are just outside of my wildest imagination for where I would have thought he would be today. And he looked me in the eye and said, Tim, I just don't know how I got here. I don't know how I got here. How in the world did I get where I am today? And he said, you know, I'm sick about it. He said, I can't sleep at night. And I wake up in the night and I think, you know, if I were to die today and stand before God today, what would I say? How would I give an account for where I am and what I've done? It's a dangerous world out there. It's too dangerous to just drift with the tide. You need to be close to Jesus Christ. I remember an incident that occurred when I was a little kid. I had started taking swimming lessons, and, you know, of course, the first thing you learn in swimming lessons is you learn how to float. And so, you know, I learned how to put my arms out, lay on my belly, and kick my feet, put my face in the water, and float. And My family went to a lake in Michigan, and we were there on the shore of the beach of the lake, and my mother was sitting on the shore there, and everybody was splashing around the water, and I said to Mom, I said, you know, watch me, I'm going to float. I want you to watch how good I learned in swimming lessons, and, you know, I'm going to do this. And so, of course, I jumped in the water, and I started floating and kicking my feet. And after a while, you know, I thought, this is pretty cool. I need to look back to see if she's paying any attention. So I tried to look back, and when I tried to look back, I did what a lot of little boys do before they gain their manly buoyancy. I sank like a rock right to the bottom. And I remember this just so vividly in my mind. Standing on the bottom and looking up. And, you know, to me, it seemed like a long way. It was probably an inch or two based on my age. But I remember distinctly looking up and seeing the light twinkling on the waves or the water up above my head. And I remember looking up thinking, uh-oh. And about that time, I saw my brother's arm kind of come by me in the water because the slope was a little steep right there. And I saw that arm come by me in the water, and I reached out to grab my brother's arm, but he did what he normally did whenever I grabbed a hold of him. He pulled himself away, and I remember distinctly looking up again thinking, uh-oh. And what to a very small boy seemed like an eternity, I looked up thinking, I'm gone. It's over. I'm going to drown right here. And suddenly, two big hands from one of my dad's friends who was there with us reached down in the water and picked me right up out of the water, drug me up to the shore and threw me on the shore, and I just kind of sat there. You know what happened? I drifted out over my head. I had no idea I was going over my head. I had no intention of getting over my head. I was just doing it. And that's what so many Christians are doing. Just drifting out there. Not really taking a hard look at where they're going to end up. What can we do about it? I mean, how do we prevent this from happening? He tells us in this verse 15, he says, instead of being blown around, instead of being like infants, instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. From him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. Here's the key. He says, instead, speaking the truth in love, we will, in all things, grow up into him who is the head. Now, he doesn't say that we may grow up into him who is the head. He doesn't say some of us may. He doesn't say some of us may want to. He says, we will. So whatever he just got done telling us to do, if we will do that, we will become like Jesus Christ. So what is it that we are supposed to do? Well, he just got done saying, speaking the truth in love, we will grow up into him who is the head. And people interpret this different ways. Some people interpret this that, you know, when I speak the truth, I need to be nice in the way I say it. In other words, I need to speak the truth with a loving tone in my voice. You know, you've all seen the people who have the ability to, you know, put that big smile on their face while they're just like cutting your feet out from under you. Speaking the truth in a loving tone, that's not what this means. Some people take this to mean speaking the truth because you have the motive of love in your heart. In other words, I'm telling you this for your own good. That's getting closer, but that's not what this means either. This means speaking the truth in the sphere or the context of a loving relationship. In other words, what we need is a life-changing relationship where the truth and love are present in our lives. The third principle from the message this morning is that life change requires life-changing relationships. The whole context of this passage is we, you know, we, us. We're doing this to one another. That if each person at Hill Country Bible Church would have a life-changing relationship with somebody else who loved you, that was the sphere of their relationship with you, they loved you, and they told you the truth. If you had someone like that in your life, that will ensure you moving on to spiritual maturity. Now, let me also say that he doesn't give you another option. He doesn't say take a discipleship course if you don't like the relation thing. He doesn't say attend a Sunday school class if you don't like the relation thing, or, you know, go to church more or pray more. That's not what he says. He says that this is the way in which we will grow up to be like Christ. And you know, it makes complete sense. Let's face it. All of us have a tendency to get off track. All of us have a tendency to give ourselves a bye on certain issues. And who comes along beside you in a loving relationship and speaks the truth, knows you well enough to evaluate and help you see what's best for you? Here's what I'm suggesting. If you don't have somebody who has known what you did in the last 168 hours, not that you went to work and that you ate and that you talked on the phone and watched a little television. That's not what I'm talking about. No, actually what you did with your time. If you don't have somebody that knows that, then you don't have a life-changing relationship. Because if there isn't somebody close enough to you to know and hear and find out what you're actually doing with your time, what your life is actually looking like, then nobody really knows you. The benefits of a life-changing relationship are many, but let me just give you a couple. First of all of us have struggles with sin in our lives, things that we're tempted to do. If somebody in your life actually knows what you're tempted to do and is looking out for you in that area, they can ask you questions. They can watch your habits. They can pay attention to what you're doing to keep you on the path. On the positive side, I believe that God calls each and every one of us to a dream that's significant for him. In other words, I believe that the majority of the people in this room, really in your heart of hearts, there was a time in your life, it may have been recent, it may have been years ago, where you sensed that God was telling you that you had a special gift and a special purpose to be used for his glory. And because of fear and busyness and thinking you might fail, you're just sitting on it. Who knows? Who in your life really knows what your dreams are? Who really knows the wild, crazy, bizarre musings of your mind? Because you know what? I think the majority of us sell out far short. And if we had one person in our life that we could say to them, you know, this may be crazy, but I really feel like God's telling me to do something bizarre. You know, I really feel like God's telling me to start a ministry in a poor housing project. Doesn't that sound crazy? Even coming out of my mouth, that sounds crazy. Who in your life says, you know what? I believe in that, and I believe in you. Let me help you think through how to do that. Let me encourage you. Let me keep you on track. I believe that there are some of you here that are as introverted as the day is long. You know, when you see yourself in the mirror in the morning, you know, you kind of like, oh, a person. And God's been saying to you, because of your heart of compassion, that the people in your office need to hear the gospel. And he's been telling you to say it, and you've been saying, there's no way I can do that. Who knows you well enough to know that God's saying that to you, who will actually put their arm around you and say, let me help you learn. Let me encourage you. I know you can do it. I'm going to pray for you every day. See, most of us don't have that. Most of us don't have somebody that's on our team. The third benefit is the benefit of the big picture. You know, we have a tendency to see from a very narrow point of view. When we come home and we've got egg on our face because of the things that we've done that are just stupid, who actually wipes the egg off your face? You know, some of us just continue to shoot ourselves in the foot with the same bad behavior, and nobody really loves us enough to say, let me tell you, here's what you look like, and holds the mirror up and says, come on, man, you can do better. Shows you the big picture, reminds you that God is working in your life. That's what a life-changing relationship is all about. And what I would suggest to you is that it's imperative for all of us, if we're going to get past the drifting and the infant stage and really take the big steps, we all need someone in our lives to help us with this. Let me also suggest that I completely understand that this is so countercultural that if we were to pull this off, to actually obey the scripture in this area, as a church, we were really to be able to identify someone who would build into our lives, we would build into theirs, where we would have life-changing experiences with, someone who really knew us, who really loved us, we would experience something that's so countercultural, so different than what the average American person experiences. It would blow our minds. And for that very reason, a lot of us are going to say, there's no way I can do this. When you say that, let me just say, you're saying no not to a church goal. You're saying no to life. This is what Jesus says about his church and about you. So I trust that you'll journey with us. I want you to see a little bit more of what this looks like. I'm going to show it to you.
Everyday storms of life we all deal with can sometimes set us adrift and cause us to lose sight of the truth. The obstacles and pressures we all face are numerous. These and everyday storms of life can be difficult, if not impossible, to navigate on our own. The elders of Hill Country Bible Church realize this and are committed to helping the church family become involved in life-changing relationships. Relationships which can help us with real-life issues. Relationships which can grow us spiritually. Relationships which can keep our perspective eternal. Relationships that shine the light of Jesus Christ in our lives.
Talk about life-changing relationships, people may have lots and lots of different ideas about what that means. And let me just kind of summarize what we mean by a life-changing relationship. What we're saying is that we want every single person in our congregation to have at least one other person in their life who knows them intimately, who cares about them personally, and who reminds them of the priorities of spiritual commitments, spiritual concerns, spiritual life.
The care circle has been there to help us with life change, something that's very difficult to do on our own. And we all know that the only way that we're going to see life change is through God. And our care circle has been there to show that to us, to hold us accountable to things that we've said we'll do, things that God calls us to do, things that we just probably could not do on our own.
It's taught me a lot about how to relate to another man on a deeper level, you know, where we don't just talk about sports or weather or jobs, but where we really get into the meat of each other's lives.
Now, a life-changing relationship is a relationship with someone who is so committed to your transformation, to your growth as a Christian, that they're willing to tell you the truth. They're willing to point out areas where maybe you are missing the mark. But they're also willing to cheerlead for you in areas where you're really growing spiritually.
You have Christian brothers and sisters there for you and with you and to root for and to root for you.
The people you'll meet there will be there for you through thick and thin. They'll help you change your life, and you'll help them change theirs.
The goal for each of us, according to Ephesians 4, is that we all grow up into Christ, who is the head of the church, and in love be the light of life and truth to each other.
A life-changing relationship is like a lighthouse. It shines the light of truth across the path of an individual to point out to them the rough seas and the rocks, the dangers of life, and to draw them into safe harbor. And so my question for each person in our church is, who is that person?
Who in your life reminds you of what it means to walk according to the principles of Jesus Christ? Who shows you when your priorities are wrong? Who talks to you about the eternal pressing glory of the coming kingdom and your part in that? Who's zealous for your spiritual gifts and that you're using them in ministry? These are the essence of a life-changing relationship. They make up the core of what we mean when we say that each person needs a life-changing relationship. Brings us to our goal for the year 2001. We've only established one goal for the church because we think this is just an incredibly important priority, and that goal is to become a mature family of believers committed to life-changing small group relationships. Now, if you think the goal is simply to get everybody in small groups, that's not exactly true. We do think that the small groups are the place where life-changing relationships will most naturally happen. And we're gearing our small group ministry to begin to embrace this as a truth and to make that a priority to develop life-changing relationships. But the goal is that each person would develop a life-changing relationship. The biggest obstacle that I see to that in this culture, besides desire, because a lot of us like our anonymity, a lot of us feel comfortable drifting where we are, don't really want that. But outside of that, the second biggest obstacle is the obstacle of time. Let's face it, I can't develop that kind of relationship with somebody. I'm entirely too busy, which is essentially why you need that type of relationship. You need some balance in your life. What we've done as a church is we've made a commitment, because we believe that this is such an important priority, that we're going to start clearing the schedule. In fact, from now on, Tuesday and Thursday nights we'll have no scheduled church activities except small groups, because we want you to give you some nights a week, not to watch more television, not to spend more time on the internet, but to actually develop deeper relationships within your family and with the other people that you're developing a life-changing relationship with. In addition to that, we've grouped our weekend activities so that 50% of our Friday night, Saturday weekend time slots will not have any activities on them. Now, some of you may be thinking, were you expecting us to be here 26 weekends out of the year? No, we weren't. We never have been. But we recognize that when we have an event every weekend, that when people try to get together, they have trouble because people are participating in different ministries. So we're grouping our ministry events to take place on the same weekends so that we have weekends where people can spend time together with people in their small groups and with their families. We, on our part, are doing our part to free up some of your schedule so that you can develop these relationships. I'm not confident that your work or the soccer league is going to do the same for you. But then they don't have the same priorities for you that Jesus Christ does either, which is part of the reason why what we do in this culture must be following Christ rather than following what everybody else on the block is doing. And part of the way we will learn that and part of the way we will stick with that is through having life-changing relationships. So that's our goal for the year 2001. Now, every year at the first of the year, we take some time in our worship service just to give you an opportunity along with us to stop and dedicate our lives to Jesus Christ during this year. And what we're going to do now is we're just going to take a few minutes and we're going to ask you just to stop in your seat and just give a chance for you to tell Jesus Christ, the year 2001 belongs to you, and I want you to work in my life. I dedicate myself to you this year. Do in me what you want to do in me. Teach me what you want me to know. Use me in the way you want to use me. Now, symbolically for the congregation, I'm going to ask the elders to come down here at the front, and they're going to kneel at the front. We're going to pray for the congregation as we have a time of just prayer. We encourage you to pray as well. We know some of you from your tradition would prefer also to come and kneel down at the front as well. If that's something that you would like to do, we invite you to do that. Don't be embarrassed. You have the freedom to do that. If you don't feel led to do that, that's fine. Pray right where you are. If you're seated in the middle and you think, I really want to go down to the front and pray, but I'll feel stupid climbing over people, don't feel stupid. People would love to get out of your way to allow you to let the Spirit of God just work in your life. And so now we're going to just take a few moments, a time of prayer and meditation, to dedicate this year to Jesus Christ.